about 20 o'clock now, and here at WHFR Dearborn, time for the new WHFR Journal. And my name is Jay Koronek, and we'll get started with that in just a second. I just want to thank and congratulate Andy Parks, who is our new big band DJ. He graduated from our staff training class just a little while back. And see, he's on the air already and doing a fantastic job. I was listening a little this morning, Andy, and it sounded great. And thank you for continuing our big band tradition here on Fridays from 10 until 1. This is coming up now for the next hour, our public affairs show, the new WHFR Journal. Local news and alternative views. Hello and welcome to another new WHFR Journal. Today is the 17th of July, 2009. Jay Koronek with you, and happy to be with you today. A very exciting day. A lot of things happening here in Dearborn and for WHFR, the radio station. And I, again, just so excited to be here. Maybe joined by a co-host later in the hour, too, so you don't get bored with just my voice. But first of all, I wanted to mention about the Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market this morning. As I have been doing the last couple shows, I've been mentioning some details about my visit there. Usually I call in from out there, and I just didn't have the time because so many people were there, and I was talking to a couple of politicians and the president of the college, and I just wanted to summarize that for you. If you think, oh, farm market, I think I'll get out there today. No, if you're listening to our live broadcast, it's over. It ends at 1 o'clock. But every Friday morning, for now, all the way into October, from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m., near the Bryant Public Library in West Dearborn on Michigan Avenue, there it is. And there must have been 25 vendors or more out there today. It was packed with people. The word is getting around how good and fresh the vegetables are and the fruits and berries. We had our usual three huge bread manufacturers, and I say huge because it's just fantastic fresh bread that they do. That's, some of it's got a crust, some of it's got a special spice in there. Again, one of my favorites is the spinach and Parmesan cheese bread. That's right. That comes from one of the vendors. Another vendor has a German bread, and it's wheat, but it's got a lot of stuff in there, and I don't want to push one vendor over the other, but because it is a little pricey, but it is so luscious, so delicious, chewy, moist and chewy all the way through. And of course, there's desserts and pastries from one vendor. There's a couple of the artisans are out there. There's actually a person from MSU who is giving gardening advice, a master gardener booth. They've been out there somewhat regularly. And that's free, I assume. And Henry Ford Community College, of course, as the sponsor, is a key sponsor of this event for the whole summer. They have a booth every week. And this week, we're featuring some information about family literacy, how that parents can help their kids learn to read and read better at an early age. I'm reminded of something that Lewis Black, one of my favorite comedians, he's on Comedy Central, and he's coming to Detroit, in fact, to record his next DVD at one of our theaters on August 2nd. But nonetheless, Lewis Black, he says, I can't sing, I can't dance, but boy, can I read. And of course, you have to have a lot of information in order to point out the weirdness and the humor of everyday life. And an active mind can't happen unless there's a lot of active words in it. And so we had one of the reading instructors, and I can't remember her name now, from our English department, who was out there giving advice, and they had books and handouts, too, that parents could get for free to talk about how kids or how their children could be encouraged to read and love to read. It's a wonderful gift to give your children the love of reading, not just the ability to read, but the love of reading for everything it can do that's so unique and so vital. We need to learn so many ways, so many things in our society to be successful and to benefit the rest of society, that reading is a key component. And, of course, a key to any sort of college education. And they're giving out, again, their free carry bags. Really, I don't know how they can afford to do that, but they're giving out free carry bags, and they have pens and all kinds of stuff. That's the Henry Ford Community College booth or tent that's part of the Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market. They're every week. Next week is coming up another demonstration from our hospitality education department, that is cooking demonstration. We have a great culinary arts program and how to be a cook, how to run a restaurant. And I think hotel management is part of that curriculum, too, even though we don't run a hotel here on campus. Why not? Why don't we just build a hotel, too? So what was most interesting, and it really is part of the show, and I'm actually feel like a real reporter going out and getting the story and coming back with it, was that I got a chance to talk to Gary Warrenchuk, who is our Wayne County commissioner from this area. And he actually remembered me. He said, how could I forget? Well, I haven't talked to him here on the show for a couple of years, and he filled me in on the Wayne County Commission, the Wayne County situation. Of course, budgets are down, and they have to lay off, I think he said, 500 people from the county in order to make the budgets balance. And that's, of course, unfortunate. But revenues coming in from property taxes, of course, are lower since there's fewer properties, and of course the assessment of properties has gone down, the value has gone down, and so they have to cut back a little. But what was interesting, I thought, and I commended him on his courage and forthrightness, he's thinking of running as the commission chair, the head of the commission, for next time. And he has several terms being our Wayne County Commissioner, as well as several terms, three full terms, of being our state legislative representative. He did, his other little political issue is from being a representative to running for Wayne County Commissioner, he switched parties from Republican to the Democratic Party. And that didn't hurt his reelection chances, probably helped in terms of Wayne County voters, but nonetheless, those people that, you know, always pull down that straight party lever or button or whatever they do these days to vote straight party tickets. But he's you know, very responsive, fine legislator. He's not up for election this fall. So I said, what are you doing out here? And even though it's great to see you. And he said, well, I'm helping spread the word about George Duraney. And George Duraney, who is an incumbent on the city council, was out there. And I did find out that George no longer runs that little cute trolley system, little bus that was an old trolley, an electric powered trolley. If anybody as old as I am, we remember back in the early 50s when there was streetcars, trolleys running on all the major streets throughout Detroit metro area, and you could go anywhere, east, west, north, and south. I don't know how many streets had trolley lines, but I know Schoolcraft did. I lived near Schoolcraft in Southfield, and I know we could get a trolley directly down to downtown and shop at the Jail Hudson store down there, and all that in the glory days of downtown Detroit. And of course, they ran on electricity powered from above. Well, that looked bad for the car industry. And so with a lot of lobbying from the car industry, it was taken out. I mean, how can the auto capital of the world, not that we are anymore, but how could the auto capital of the world have the embarrassment of people riding the trolley or even buses, even though they're powered by gas engines? That wouldn't, just wouldn't look right, right? I mean, Detroit, we have to all be in cars here, and thus a lot of the problems we have today. But nonetheless, the trolley of George had run for years no longer exists. He's a realtor these days in Dearborn, And how's that going, George? As well as a city council member and running for re-election. I didn't talk directly to George. He was busy talking to the other people. I didn't see Mr. D'Ambrosio. I think it's Philip D'Ambrosio, who we're going to cover the council candidate challengers today, try to finish up the League of Women Voters descriptions of them, give our opinions about what we think of those two paragraphs. Also indicate that the Press and Guide has begun a section, I think it's the Press and Guide, that talks about these candidates for the field. Well, no, I'm actually, yes, the Press and Guide from Wednesday, July the 15th, 2 days ago, has a survey, so we're going to feature that too, because they asked their own questions too about what was going on there. But so it was great talking to Gary Warrenchuk today. By the way, you can't blame any metro airport noise on the Wayne County commissioners. And I hadn't remembered this, but they have, a couple of years back at least, they set up a separate commission now to handle all the running of the airport. And so that got that complaint off the commissioner's back. And I'm trying to remember, is it Sheriff Ficano that is in charge of that commission now? Is he their chief executive of that, as well as Wayne County Sheriff? I just don't remember. Or is he Wayne County Executive Officer and also serving, on the independent Metro Airport Board? I think that's the case. Yeah, I think that's the case. In any event, and then I brought up, I said, well, what about the Cobo Hall thing? Is Wayne County involved in that? And they're not at all. There's no Wayne County money that might go into a new Cobo Hall or a renovation of the Cobo Hall complex in downtown Detroit. That would be city money with some help from the state of Michigan, perhaps. And so that's the story on that one. So I said, what's left for Wayne County? He said, well, the roads, you know, definitely roads and many other things. There's social services and, you know, there's various ways, many ways that they help people. So maybe we can get in touch with Gary. He promised to come by our WHFR booth at Dearborn Homecoming between August 7th and 9th, and we can ask some more questions that come to mind about Wayne County and services and how it's going. President Gail Mee of Henry Ford Community College was out there today, too, and I know she's out there several times. Seen her a couple times out there at the Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market. And I did also meet Mary Petchikoff, spoke with her and her husband. She is on the Dearborn Board of Education, not running this fall. They rotate the elections. There is a Board of Ed in Dearborn election every November, no matter what year it is. Her position is not up. Her position continues for another year or so. So she doesn't have to worry about that. But Dr. Mee said several things. First of all, I did have to ask about how the parking lots are going here. If you come here as orientation for a new student or you need to enroll, first of all, we're closed on Fridays for another couple weeks. Okay, so you really shouldn't try on Fridays. But if you come Mondays or Thursdays to enroll or register in person, you'll notice we don't have many parking lots left. There's just two on the north side for students to park in and visitors. And everything else is dug up and huge trucks and big holes in the ground and new sewer pipes and, oh my gosh, what a mess. It is promised to be done by the start of school on August 27th. We've all got our fingers crossed here. And even though there'll still be some other lots that won't be completed, we'll have to start doing the ones on the north side at that point. We are promised, since they're making the lots bigger, higher capacity, they're promising to have the same capacity as last fall. Now, we're always sort of crowded at the start of every semester, and we do have increased enrollment coming here in the fall because, wow, we've got a lot of classes, got a lot of curriculums that people want, a lot of jobs to be training people in, and looks like we're going to be busting at the seams. Most all of the construction, all the big holes in the ground that are here now are going to be, filled in and topped over with beautiful new lots and more parking spaces. So we'll have the same numbers last fall. And when it's all completed in about another year and a half or 2 years, it'll be the greater capacity that we need, and still protecting our wetlands and endangered species. Yes, they surround us here in the Henry Ford Forest, State Forest, that is to our west and to a certain extent to our southwest. And so that's another reason for this project. And Dr. Mee said because of the environmental standards, we've had to raise a little extra money. It's going to cost about $20 million to finish this project. And 3 years ago, it was only going to be $6 million until they discovered the wetlands issue. But that's your, that's your tuition money at work. That's primarily how we pay for this place. About, 70% of 80% of our budget comes from tuition from the people that are here using the place. And we still have, get this one, free parking for our students. Yeah, there's no extra fee for parking here. We just got to finish building the new lots, but there's no extra fee, unlike many other colleges who charge an extra fee for parking for maintenance of the lots. And so that was interesting. Also, she wanted to tell me about the millage coming up for the fall, and I wanted to feature that right away. This is what's called a transition in the real world, and it's called a segue on radio. How we're going to just jump right in to this story, which I think is in the press guide. I'm turning the pages on the air, which is unique for the new WHFR Journal. No other show actually turns the newspaper pages on the air here. Hear that? That's a real newspaper. Okay. And here it is. It's page 15A from the Press and Guide from Wednesday, July 15th. And it indicates that we're going to be asking the voters in November, and this will be on the November ballot too, folks, for one half of a mill that is a renewal. Underline that. Renewal. You're already paying it, folks, in Dearborn. It's a supplemental property tax that is set to expire next year. And so, now's the time to act on this. And we're not looking for any tax increases. To my knowledge, in fact, we're not raising tuition, even for fall. Even though, state aid is down. It has been down, at least it was down significantly. For example, state aid to HFCC is at the same level it was in 1999. So 10 years ago, that's how much we're getting this year. And I think it did go up for a couple of years, but then it had to go back down because the state is in such budget trouble. We've stayed fairly equal the last couple of years, but it's no more than it was in 99. So that's where we get the money. Federal money, we get a little support for student loans, but basically we don't get federal grants. I mean, there's a little bit, I know, that trickles in. And I've got another article that'll follow up this one that'll explain that to you a little more so you understand. And, of course, this will actually, this half-mill renewal to Dearborn voters, it'll cost you less than it did when it was first approved back in 2003. Why? Because your home value has gone down. Your property value has gone down. You pay less taxes in general. And of course, this millage then, which is based on property value, is going to be decreasing too. So they think it's going to be, for the half mill, property owners pay 50 cents for every $1,000 of assessed value. So I think in Dearborn, if you have an $80,000 house assessed, and what that means is that your selling price is about double that. They assume that market value, just an assumption, is about double that, or $160,000. So that may be the average home in Dearborn, maybe not. So if you think your home is only worth $100,000, then your assessed value is, if you're going to sell your house outright, your assessed value is really $50,000. Okay, so 50 cents, let's say it's at $100,000 market value, 50 cents times 50 means $25 for this millage. And we also collect an additional millage for the basic operation, but that's not expiring now, not for a few years yet, okay? And in fact, the newspaper got it wrong. That's why we talked to the source here in the new WHFR Journal. Shame on the newspaper. That's Katie Hetrick. It's an easy mistake to make, but the total millage we get from the community is 3 mills, but it's half a mill from this supplemental that was so desperate back in 2003, And 2.5 is the regular standard millage for the college. So it's 3 mills altogether, and that's a dollar a mill for every $1,000 of assessed value. So 3 mills altogether would be $3 for every $1,000 of assessed value for Henry Ford Community College. Why is that a good deal? Why do you love community colleges? Well, of course, very simply, most of you know who are listening that tuition is lower, about half as much or even more than people who don't live in Dearborn. So special discount, if you will, special credit there for the people that actually pay 17% of our budget. 17% comes from, I think that's right, give or take a percent, comes from the people in Dearborn, property holders in Dearborn that pay these millage taxes. Okay, as I said, 70-80% comes from student tuition and fees, and a little bit of money trickling in from donors. Yeah, we have a foundation that collects donations, and also, of course, a little bit of federal money, as I said, and it's not much, but sometimes we get federal grants for this or that. But it's mostly, unlike other colleges, it's mostly user money that runs this place. But for that small amount of money, people in Dearborn can get this tremendously reduced rate for tuition, which everybody seems to need these days. Even to those who don't live in Dearborn, our tuition is much lower than the other public universities nearby. I think we're getting a lot of students coming back to us in their freshman, sophomore years because they know they can come back to us from that four-year school that they can't afford anymore and finish out their first 2 years here. And then all the credits they earn here will transfer back so they continue their four-year degree either nearby or anywhere in the world. So that transferability is sort of guaranteed here. So any questions about that, we'll be mentioning it more and talking more to the HFCC people. It's the first time it was in the newspaper, okay? And so, again, no increase at all, but HFCC is asking for a half mil, the supplemental property tax from 2003 to be continued, but it'll cost taxpayers less, of course, because of the decline in property values. But we're not asking for an increase, and it's not even the whole amount, which doesn't expire for a while, but it's essential to our operation. Community colleges in general are efficient operation. I'd like to feature now, in fact, on the community college issue, the editorial comment from David Brooks today in the New York Times, in the editorial page. Now, Brooks is, he has appeared on television on the public television, at least be called McNeil Lehrer Report. So it's their daily news report, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, whatever channel you watch it on. And he is a commentator who is known as pretty much a Republican or more conservative anyway than some of the other editorialists. He doesn't write the editorial for the New York Times, but he's on their editorial page or their op-ed page, the page that is opposite. Okay, it's just on the facing page to the editorial page. And today he talks about community colleges. So let me let you know this. It's entitled No Size Fits All. He says, this year in the middle of the recession, many community colleges are seeing enrollment surges of 10% to 15%. And an aside here by me, Jay Koronek, WHFR station advisor, and host of this show, is that we're approaching 18 to 20% increase here at Henry Ford Community College for the fall. Well, David Brooks continues, and the investment seems to pay off. According to one study, students who earn a certificate from one of these colleges registered an 11% gain. And yet funding lags. Most people in government and the news media didn't go into community college, and they don't send their children to them. It's a blind spot in their consciousness. As a result, four-year colleges receive three times as much federal money per student as community colleges. This is why President Obama's announcement this week of a $12 billion plan, that's over 10 years, by the way, folks, to produce 5 million more community college graduates by 2020 is so important. Actually, 2020, that's more than 10 years away, isn't it? Well, course, the money may not start flowing until next year. That's 2010, so it's a 10-year plan. Okay. Brooks goes on. What's important about the Obama initiative is that it doesn't throw money at the problem. It ties money to reform and has the potential to spur a wave of innovation. People who work at community colleges deserve all the love we can give them. Thank you, Mr. Brooks. Thank you. Because I work here. I'm glad you see this clearly, even though you probably didn't go to community college either. I almost came here, by the way, folks. Yeah, it was number 2 on my list of schools to go to right out of high school. I was valedictorian, I'm sorry to say. I got the highest grades in my high school. So I had tuition everywhere. But Henry Ford Community College is a commuter school. And yeah, I could have driven here and lived at home. But I also got at the other schools free room and board. Oh, it was tremendous scholarships in those days for people, especially people who were valedictorians. So I not only got free tuition, I got free room and board. So I went to Oakland University in Rochester, Michigan, and then I used other grants and I got my graduate degrees first from University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, and then from Wayne State University. And I thank the government and the loan programs that they set up and the schools for those scholarships. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, my free ride scholarship and paying for tuition, room and board, and books, talk about a free ride, came from the Detroit Edison Company, now called DTE. So I was very beholden to them, and I still use their electricity. Isn't that amazing? Well, we all have to, don't we? In any event, yeah, community colleges are a great deal. We're very efficient. We don't spend money foolishly. That's why we're able to have lower tuition. I will say, and somebody might remember this, is that teachers at Henry Ford Community College, on average, for their base pays, make more money than full professors at, or all professors average together, not just full professors, at other public institutions like University of Michigan, Dearborn, and Wayne State University. But they, I believe, have a maximum of 6 hours of teaching a week, and we, for our slightly higher pay, it's not that much more, but slightly higher percentage than what they get, we have to teach 15 hours a week. What that means, folks, is like 5 3-credit-hour classes. And teachers who are full-time at a 4-year public university in Michigan for their base pay, as they're calling it, their basic pay, have to teach 9 hours. Okay? So almost, you know, they're doing like 40% less work, and they're getting almost the pay we get, but we do get paid slightly better than they do. I know they're jealous of that. I'll get a union, folks, okay? But I kind of wonder, and I'm not putting down 4-year schools. These institutions around here are wonderful institutions for what they're doing for the students, and none of them are bad 4-year institutions in terms of academics or their effort they put in. But why did they cost so much? Okay? Why do they cost so much? They have almost as many part-time teachers as we do now. They always say, well, community college, they have all these part-time teachers who get paid a lot less. Yeah, but all of us now use about 70-80% adjunct teachers, professionals. And by the way, starting this fall, Yes, this fall, all of our adjuncts have to have the same academic credentials, that is a master's degree minimum, as our full-time people. Of course, many of our full-time people here have doctorates, but yours truly doesn't. I have 2 master's degrees. Does that make me a mama? M-A-M-A? Oh, well, bad joke. Anyway, so, you know, 3 times as much federal money, and their tuitions are huge. They have costs, of course. In any event, we hardly get any federal money, and yet here we're educating the students, the next generation of people in the country, and because of the economic situation, we're the schools of choice these days. And, of course, quality education, we think, especially Henry Ford Community College. They don't pay me to say this, folks. I've been here 40 years. And I'm still here, even after retirement. I love the place. Not because they still pay me as an adjunct, but just because I think they're doing a fine job. I wouldn't tell you that. I wouldn't lie to you if I didn't believe it. Other schools are doing a great job, too, in their own ways. But I think Henry Ford, good, solid education if you come here. And certainly value for the money. Okay, well, here's this point about we deserve all the love we can give them. Continuing with David Brooks, he says, they get so little prestige day to day. But the fact is, many community colleges do a poor job of getting students through. About half drop out before getting a degree. Most schools have poor accountability systems and inadequately track student outcomes. They have little information about what works. They have trouble engaging students on campus. Many remedial classes are a joke, often because expectations are too low. Should that be expectations are too high and the students can't achieve them? Well, whatever. We get the point. Now, this is not Henry Ford Community College. I mean, we've had extensive work in accountability studies, and in fact, this is part of our North Central accreditation that actually gives our degrees the value it does. Those committees, when they come here, they give us the highest ratings, the longest period before they have to come back and look again, because we have always gone way beyond what they're requiring in terms of this sort of accountability. But there are going to be, according to Dr. Mee, our president today, a lot of strings attached to this money. But I'm sure we have the information available. We just have to hire more people to pull it together so that it meets their criteria. Still, if you look at the $12 billion over 10 years, it's only $1.2 billion a year. And you know how many billions they give to the banks and so on. So this amount for education is so small, $1.2 billion over 10 years, compared to $30 billion here, $40 billion here, $60 billion there for AIG. The banksters, folks, a Michael Moore term, you know, I think bank plus stir, like gangster. Anyway, however you see them, I still don't understand why we couldn't have let a few of those go broke. For 30 or 40 million, 30 or 40 billion here or there, wouldn't be a better investment in the future to put 30 or 40 billion into all of our schools? And that's just one bank bailout, 30, 40 billion, you know. And that's 3-4 times as much as this 10-year plan that Obama's introduced. Still, we'll take 50 cents. We'll take anything to make education better for everybody and keep the cost down. And the accountability thing, we're not afraid of that. We're happy to give them the info that they want. That's just the way that goes. Okay, so the Obama initiative sets up a significant innovation fund, which, if administered properly, could set in motion a spiral of change. It has specific provisions for remedial education, outcome tracking, and online education. It links public sector training with specific private sector employers. Real reform takes the advantage of the college's most elemental feature. These colleges educate students with wildly divergent interests, goals, and abilities. They host students with radically different learning styles. Successful reform has to blow up the standard model. You can't measure progress by how many hours a student spends with her behind in a classroom chair. I had to change that word for broadcast. You have to incorporate online tutoring as the military does. You have to experiment with programs like Digital Bridge Academy that are tailored to individual learning styles. You have to track student outcomes as the Lumina Foundation is doing. Never heard of them. Oh, well. The key architects of this proposal, Rahm Emanuel in the White House, that's President Obama's number one aide, and Representative George Miller have created a program that is intelligently designed and boldly presented. It's a reminder that the Obama administration can produce hope and change when the White House is the engine of policy creation and not the caboose. So there is a conservative commentator, albeit writing for the New York Times, who sees this federal initiative as oh so necessary, oh so appropriate, and something that you have to be strong-minded about from the top down. It's not something that can trickle up. There's a lot of legislation, but a lot of innovative plans have to come top down, whether it's health change or environmental change or whatever, and the Obama administration is busy trying to do that, although they are also maybe a little too pragmatic, in my humble opinion, because they got to get some bills passed. You got to negotiate with all those senators and representatives. And they all want their own little bit of pork or their own little spin on the issue incorporated. So there's a lot of negotiating going on behind the scenes now on all these major bills. But $1.2 billion for community colleges over 10 years, that should be a no-brainer. That should be a slam dunk through the committees in Congress. Why? It's almost no money at all. Although it's desperately needed, but it's almost no money at all. Compared to the 30, 40, 60, 70 billion to the banksters here and there. And I'm sure we're not done yet. And congratulations to all the banksters this week, including JP Chase Morgan and Goldman Sachs, that reported billions of dollars of profit just in the last 3-4 months. Why? Because they're the only investment banks going, and they're buying everything at a fire sale price from everybody else that went bankrupt. And thanks to the government's money, they're doing just fine. And I just wonder if that all was really that essential. I'm sorry. All economists say, liberal conservative, we had to do the bailout of the banksters. But oh my God, what we could have used that money for. You know. In any event, thank you, David Brooks. Give your local community college all the love it deserves. That's his point there. Okay, well, we're about at the, we're a little past the halfway point, and now we can move into some other things from the papers. I think that's all I wanted to do from this. I think I have to move on now because we promised to complete our analysis of just the comments, the mere two paragraphs that are in the League of Women Voters Guide. And we did half of the challengers last week. And I am going to go over the second half of the challengers. Why the challengers? Why not the incumbents? Because you should already know about the incumbents. Those who listen to the show, you voted for them. Your voters listening to the show, preaching to the choir here, you know the reputations, or you should anyway, the people who are already elected to our city council. And you can vote for them if you want to, but you don't know the challengers. Most of them don't have the name recognition or the money to put anything in here in this primary vote that's coming up on August 4th, just a couple weeks away. And so there's no way of knowing about them other than what I say or the League of Women Voters. Now, I'll mention this again, but you can get your own copy either at the Dearborn City Clerk's office in City Hall, print it out for free, or get a computer, League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights, their website, which is all the first letters of those words I just said, LWVDDH, League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights, LWVDDH.org, okay? And even the newspaper, which is now the Press Guide, is starting to print their own two paragraphs, and unfortunately, they're very similar to what these same people submitted to the League of Women Voters Guide, but there are some differences. Okay. Remember, all the opinions expressed on the new WHFR Journal is that of, in this case today, mine alone, not necessarily anyone else here at Henry Ford Community College, not faculty, staff, administrators, or students. Just keep that in mind. Just yours truly, Jay Koronek. We're making waves with these opinions, too. Now, I believe, I don't want to slight anyone, that might have stopped with George Hart. Yes, he is a challenger, but because he has name recognition, we're not going to go on and talk more about George Hart. Also, as we did last week, so we move on to Scott J. Marquette. And here's what we know about Scott J. Marquette. And I don't care if they're married or not. I don't care if they have pets. But remember, education means something to me. Okay. I don't care if he can sing or dance, but can he read? As Lewis Black said, too. So that is the key question in this issue. And he went to University of Michigan, Dearborn, got his Bachelor of Science degree in biology. By the way, his undergraduate degree was in psychology. And then he went to U of M Ann Arbor, Got a master's in health services administration just in 2007. So, you know, if I know nothing else about candidates and I only have two paragraphs, how much education they completed is important to me. Okay. And I know, as I said last week, you get some people who aren't very wise, even though they got a college degree or they got a strange attitude about life or points of view. But still, it means they had to be dependable, reliable. They had to understand instructions. They had to be able to read closely. They had to be able to relate to the teachers and the administrators. And it takes a lot to get a degree. It takes a lot of determination. Okay, and that means something to me in terms of a political candidate. Not the only thing. So, yeah, Scott Marquette, I think favorably about his background. From what he stated there, just from his educational background, he has been involved in a lot of community activities. We don't know if it's just because he wrote checks or he actually physically spent time helping in one way or the other with a lot of these community activities. In terms of issues, which is the second major area the League of Women Voters asked about, he thinks, number one, the lack of jobs that support the middle-class family is a problem. So developing new industries, attracting, relocating businesses to this area, build relationships with current businesses that I guess are more solid so they don't leave us in times of need. I hear rumors from an anonymous source this week that two major restaurants and bars in West Dearborn are in bad, bad economic times and may be closing soon. We hope that's not the case. Support your local businesses, okay? By all means, whether it's restaurants or bars, we got to keep the local community going. And if you go out and spend money out anywhere, buy local. Try to avoid the chain stores, unless you had to buy a chain, of course. Another one of those bad jokes. See, if I don't tell you when the joke happened, they're so bad, you may not have paid attention, and therefore you can't fully appreciate the bad jokes. So Scott J. Marquette is one of the challengers for the Dearborn Council for the primary on the 4th. Besides trying to attract new businesses, he doesn't say exactly how that can happen, but better publicize available services. And again, I think that's pretty well publicized now, Mr. Marquette, but I guess there's always somebody who doesn't get the message about these things. Engage residents in city decision-making. I know we have neighborhood association meetings and people attend from the city, and so I think that's going along pretty well, but can always be better. Improve home values. New jobs and strong community will increase demand for homes. Well, how will the city council get new jobs other than keeping businesses and attracting businesses? I don't know. You're going to reduce the taxes on businesses? That was my anonymous source from West Dearborn that said, yeah, drop the taxes for us and stop having us pay for parking. Even though there is paid parking, they want the businesses in West Dearborn clearly, and there is that lawsuit in progress, they clearly want paid parking eliminated, at least until economic times get better. Because they're hurting, because not enough people feel that they can easily just drive in and not have to worry about tossing coins in the meters or have an evening out that might go from 2 hours to 4 hours, then they have to interrupt halfway through, or they get a parking ticket when they get out at the end of the evening. That's no fun. So, I mean, businesses that I've talked to and my couple of key anonymous sources in West Dearborn got to get rid of the paid parking and maybe not have them pay for the maintenance of the lots, these assessment fees that the business people have to pay in East and West Dearborn for the maintenance of the city lots. So who's left? The general fund. All of us as taxpayers of Dearborn, that's the only other people. It's got to come out of the general fund that all of us equally pay for free parking and to keep the businesses stimulated. But that's it. I don't see any other way around it. I guess I do agree with Mr. Tefelski and Mr. Thomas, who are currently on the council, about that paid parking issue. And for that matter, I always have. Oh, well. So anyway, Mr. Marquette seems to be a good candidate worthy of your consideration. Brian C. O'Donnell is another person who's running. He's got a BS and an MBA. He's in the healthcare industry, but, and of course, MBA is Master of Business Administration. It doesn't say anything more about, you know, the Bachelor of Science area. He says he's bringing a fresh new perspective on city issues. Okay, what are those issues? Well, financial, property values, money's down. He says, once elected, my first priority, somebody taking a stand here, is to forego 25% of my base city compensation to demonstrate my commitment. So he's going to give back a quarter of his pay as city council member, which I think is about $20,000 a year here, because it's just a part-time job, back to the city. By the way, I am joined in the studio by a former Dearborn Heights City Council candidate, and he's going to be a candidate again in the Dearborn Heights election coming up. Not to plug him, although we'll find out what his views are, since he's an alternative incumbent, a non-incumbent challenger for fall. But Ned Epigian is here. Hi, Ned. Whoa, we've got...
two microphones on or something.
Yeah.
Or stereo.
Let me find out which one you're on. Keep talking.
Okay. The box says only one is working, so.
Yeah, one channel in your headphones now. You don't hear the other side, is it?
Oh.
Did you notice you're only hearing through one ear?
No, I did.
Okay, well, it's not your hearing. It's our connection there. Okay, well, we're going over the candidates.
I've been listening to you in the car while I was driving here.
Some of these people are also talked about.
Several interesting ones with backgrounds, which are a little unusual. I didn't expect.
Well, there is some here in the Dearborn Press and Guide from Wednesday. I'm going to give Ned the paper to look at the story here. We can't feature both. I want to complete the sort of summary from the League of Women Voters. And
I wouldn't confuse the issue. I'd
maybe,
just stay with the League of Women.
Well, right. Maybe next week or on the 31st, whatever's in the paper, and no doubt the Press Guide, Times Herald, they will have more of their own little interviews or at least brief comments from these people.
Ed, you said they're pretty similar, but there could be differences.
Well, here's the issue, and I'll continue with Mr. O'Donnell in a second. The issue is that some people didn't respond to the questionnaire of the League of Women Voters.
That's not unusual. You'll find that all the time.
And why do you think that is, Ned?
It separates the serious candidates from people who not really want to put
their... Well, that's right. I mean, it's got to be a negative thing if they're not, if they really don't want to get the word out about their candidacy. You think you do everything possible, especially for free. There's no cost to fill this in, except maybe price of a stamp to send it back to the League of Women Voters.
I went to a recent screening at the UAW in 15th Democratic District, and they asked interesting questions, but they asked me, why didn't you win last time?
Okay.
But it relates to this question. There were people in the race I was in last time that did absolutely nothing, did not answer those questions that were published, did not come to the TV interview, and one of them got 67 votes less than me. So my answer was the problem is people are uninformed. They just vote for names, and then later on I've gone to their homes and knocked on the door, and she said, well, I voted already, and I say, who do you vote for? And she said to me, I don't remember. I don't know.
Yeah.
Not so that's clear, the problem. So that's why. Yeah.
An awful lot of people that vote, they vote uninformed way, and then sometimes even a mistake. I know that name, and they don't really know that name at all. It was like a distant relative or somebody they met in high school, and yet they vote for them for no very clear reason.
And ethnic names definitely have a disadvantage.
So at this point, the League of Women Voters did not get a response from Dearborn City Council candidates Joseph Agius, A-G-I-U-S, Terry Burke, Patrick D'Ambrosio, who has taken out an ad in the paper, and last week I didn't get a chance to talk to him, but he was over at the farmer's market even.
That's unusual for him, then.
But he didn't respond, but he's putting money into this other advertising. Patrick M. Kiernan, I don't know if he's related to the Kiernan's restaurant people. He might be.
Could be.
He didn't respond to League of Women Voters. And Molly Sharp, who is known and loved by somebody here at the station on our staff. Is a great candidate. Boy, she's running. I'm going to vote for her. She didn't respond. And on the front page of the Press and Guide, a bunch of people didn't respond to their questionnaire. This is the Press and Guide separate questionnaire. Agius, Burke, Patrick D'Ambrosio, Patrick Keenan, and Molly Sharp.
So obviously they think what they have to say is not helpful to them, that their names alone count for something.
Oh, I see why. This is the newspaper
time
for
limit.
You. No, get this article by Sean Delaney, if you read closely in the Press and Guide. all they're doing is quoting from the League of Women Voters.
Ah. So that's
which I've already been using. So that's why the same people didn't respond. So I hope that they've gone to the trouble to send out their own questionnaire.
Sometimes they do.
Well, sometimes they
usually do. Probably after the primary.
Well, right. It's too many people to do that now, right. Maybe they think. All right.
From my experience, I think they will later themselves.
Okay, let me continue. There's not many others here, but Brian O'Donnell, he actually, and what a great political line, to give back a quarter of his pay back to the city. Now, that's only about $5,000, folks, out of his, the pay to a part-time council person here.
They also, in Dearborn, get the money for going to meetings. So
yeah,
their increment's a lot different than Dearborn Heights. I think Dearborn Heights pays $8,800. Dearborn is at least double that.
Uh-huh.
Plus, there's other things.
Yeah, they go to conferences. There's other fees that they can't access.
You just get that $8,800.
Hopefully they're not going to. Did you hear nationally about the Social Security Administration?
No.
They sent 700 of the Social Security officers from the Social Security Administration, Washington, D.C., to a three-day conference retreat to relieve their stress.
There's stress.
Yeah, and this cost the taxpayers $750,000. $750,000. But it's 700 people, so it's about $1,000 a person. But in these difficult times, they sent 700 of their top administrators, and apparently the Social Security administrator at the top, I mean, the guy who's ever in charge of Social Security, oh, he went too.
He needed the rest.
Yeah, because of all the stress from the job. We've got to, excuse me, and this was on some national news thing, Keith Olbermann or somebody, MSNBC, just a day or so ago, because somebody actually had their cell phone taking a video of one of the stress-relieving workshops, was everybody in this huge room standing up and boogieing, dancing, just to relieve stress. And this is one part of their three-day party, and it was some resort. I mean, 700 people. It was a big resort, I guess, in Vegas or somewhere. Oh, my God. Your taxpayer dollars at work. Well, I don't know any Dearborn City Councilmen that recently have gone to Hawaii, so I don't think that's paid for. What else? Well, Mr. O'Donnell has said specifically neighborhoods are in peril, need to be stabilized, get those building ordinances and code work done and so on, and also police and fire. And one of the other candidates, of course, said that we're not staffing enough active police and fire people according to the charter, that they have met the charter requirements, but some of these people, they're able to staff them at less money by making them a clerk in the back office or something, rather than an active policeman or an active fireman who do all the hard work. And so that's an interesting issue that some of the candidates are mentioning. Also, he says we've got to fix paid parking. Now, I don't know how he's going to say to do that, but he says doing more with less has to
cut off all the meters and standard. Sell them to somebody.
Well, let's have paid parking in our own driveways, so pay ourselves. I don't understand. Our friends, when they come over, they have to pay in the park. Okay, moving on. We just got a couple more to go here from the League of Women Voters.
You know, when I don't know if I heard it from you or from somebody else, that the Ford Motor Company pays some gigantic percentage of the Dearborn tax, something like 2/3. So these people talking about taxes.
They pay property taxes, but it's much reduced
than what it used to be.
They have tax abatement in going on for almost all of their facilities. And this was reminded myself and my person I talked to, anonymous source this week, about 10 or so years ago, you know, and I've mentioned this on the air, but he confirmed it too. Ford threatened to move their headquarters somewhere else if they didn't get a tax cut from the city. I mean, they threatened. So don't think that Ford loves Dearborn. They just as soon, big business, they'd move somewhere else if it was cheaper for them. So we gave them a hefty tax cut. Yes, they wrote a check. I thought it was $10 million, but I was told this week it was $6 million towards the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center complex that they wrote a check. But it made them look good, but in fact they got this huge multi-year million-dollar tax abatement on all their property. So they're still, we need them in Dearborn because they are paying a lion's share of property taxes, and therefore indirectly, money that from the general fund might go to parking, too.
If I remember, it may have been 30 or more years ago, they were paying a substantial city mm-hmm. tax, like 75-80%, and then some law went through at the state of Michigan that you couldn't do that.
I think there was that, but they also remember, speaking of laws, I mean, they have on retainer 50 or 60 lawyers all the time. You got to do something with them, so they are always negotiating and suing whatever communities around the U.S., around the world they can to get lower taxes. I mean, why not? If you got those lawyers and they, you know, if in the long run the lawyers' fees will save them money in taxes, so keep those lawyers going. And but in Dearborn, they actually had, according to off-the-record sources, a threat that if you don't cut our taxes, we're just going to move to Tennessee or somewhere else. And there goes Henry Ford and the Dearborn connection. They didn't seem to care. Now, I doubt they would really want to lose that bit of publicity or, what do you call it, tradition, you know, symbolic tradition from their car company. But it's just a business, so what the heck. All right. Next candidate, Ali Sayed. That's S-A-Y-E-D, Ali Sayed. He graduated Dearborn High School. He's pursuing a degree in public administration, so he has not completed his four-year degree yet, which, again, doesn't mean anything terrible automatically, but he doesn't have the extensive learned knowledge or education of some of our other candidates.
Means he's a young man, mm-hmm. probably.
It says he began his entrepreneurial career by purchasing a little restaurant near Detroit Metro Airport, and it gave him opportunity to strive, learn, and succeed. He says, being an avid sports lover and devoted citizen, he found a rewarding balance through the establishment of what's called Hype Athletics, and H-Y-P-E, and it started in 2001. But he's one of these people that did not read the instructions of League of Women Voters, so they only allowed 100-word maximum as an answer for each of these two major questions.
And believe me, you have to count the words, else they will eliminate one word.
And he went over 100, in maybe it's just by a few words, we don't know, or a few sentences.
There could be one word.
But, you know, I'm sorry, Mr. Sayed, you need to follow instructions. It does look bad that you had a lot more to say, and that's wonderful, but you weren't allowed to say it because you didn't focus your statements within the maximum number of words. Okay, what about those problems? He says family services, youth prevention services, and crime prevention services are an issue. He says, I will encourage a move that will involve families to become more involved with the neighborhoods and parks. Okay, we'll encourage them to become more involved with the neighborhoods and parks and to maintain the standard of living. I always thought that people should shovel their own streets. That's weird, huh? They do that
sidewalks.
In China. Well, but it... You know, if you don't have a big wide street, it's only 3 feet more out from the curb.
You remember Mayor Hubbard had a statement about that years ago.
Yeah.
Everybody
did their share.
It was something like that.
Yeah.
Took care of there wouldn't be any problem.
We'd save millions and millions. Of course, in Detroit, we get no. I understand they get no snow removal
at all
whatsoever. Oh well, excuse me here. It takes my breath away to think about that, but
you don't have far to go over here to run across one of those streets.
Yeah, Mr. Sayed says crime is escalating in Dearborn. Now, I do not believe that's true, Mr. Sayed. I've looked at the statistics from the Dearborn Police Department for the last several years. Crime is declining in Dearborn. Now, maybe I don't know what. Maybe it's a certain area of Dearborn that you're referring to. It's a question. Well, we've only got a minute to finish up the show. Nancy Siwick is another candidate for Dearborn Council. And she has a BS from EMU in special ed, master's in learning disabilities. She's taught in the Dearborn schools until 1988. CEO of Jetco Corporation, manufacturer of silicon products for defense and aerospace. So CEO for woman, great. She's been part of Dearborn Business Professional Women. Served on the Zoning Board of Appeals, Historical and City Plan Commissions. Mm-hmm. So she's got a lot of background experience in business. She says the neighborhoods and business districts are not, and she says today that's her big issue. Dearborn today is not the city it was 20 years ago. There's a significant change. Well, of course. And she wants it to be changed for the good, and she's concerned about the future. but no hard facts there. So next week, we're going to have to finish up because we're out of time now. This is WHFR Dearborn, and guess what's coming up? That's right, Highway 61, The Best in Blues with Joanne Korchinska. Hussein Saab, that's S-O-B-H, is to be talked about next week.
I think it's Sob.
Sob, thank you. And Adrian, doesn't say Adrienne, it says Adrian Wyganik, and there's a name familiar to everyone. So as we said, the Press and Guide story this week is also based on the same comments from the same people as in the League of Women Voters Guide, which you can get a copy for yourself, or you can read the Press and Guide about that. So
I wonder why they did that. Seems to take up space in the newspaper.
They couldn't do any research on their own. They just wanted to fill a story, because I've been covering it for 2 weeks, and they thought, well,
Jay's doing it. We don't need to.
No, they don't want to look bad, you know, as a newspaper, that here's this big primary coming up with 25 or 26 candidates, and there's nothing in the paper about them. And even this week, there's no original story about who these people are. So they said, well, the best source we got is the League of Women Voters, and let's just do it. So we got to get out of here, folks, and make room for blues music. Thank you for listening to the new WHFR Journal. Thank you for listening today. Netta Piggy and my co-host, Jay Koronick, that's me. Stay tuned for, as I said, Highway 61, The Best in Blues with Joanne Kay.